Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
This is a show that I did with Frederick Blackburn, otherwise known as Blackbird 9. And during this show, we discuss a party game, a social game that I think was invented by a Jew. And this particular party game is based on a thesis that was written, and it has to do with knowledge. The person who has knowledge stands the better chance, and it's a party game known as Werewolf. So here's a short video that explains how the party game works. But even though there are fewer werewolves, apparently the werewolves win most of the time. And the issue at hand is people with information have a huge edge over people who don't. And so the context in which we're discussing it is the edge that the Jews have over whites. That it doesn't matter that Jews are fewer. Jews have got access to knowledge. And they know many things that whites don't know. So the Jews are like the werewolves. So here is a short video that explains how the game Werewolf works. And then after that, the show with Frederick starts.
Your neighbors are disappearing left and right. And word has it, it's werewolves. They're living amongst you. And you've all gathered to try to find out who they are. Can you figure out who's innocent and who are the werewolves? This is Werewolf, a party game for devious people. Werewolf is a social deduction game where villagers are attempting to find the werewolves and the werewolves are attempting to take over the village. To set it up, you'll need to build a character deck. Now, to build a basic deck, you'll need to take the following roll cards. We have seven players, so you'll need one moderator card, one seer, one doctor, two werewolf cards, and the remaining cards will be villagers. Now, once you have the character deck assembled, shuffle and pass a card out to each player. The basic roles include the moderator. The moderator is both the game facilitator and storyteller. You set the flow of the game by directing the action from round to round, night to day. You give the players prompts, give them time to do that action, then move on to the next prompt. And don't worry, you don't have to have anything memorized. The moderator gets a guide card, which helps with the flow of the game. Villagers. Your goal is to protect the town. You'll vote during the day cycles to discover and eliminate the werewolves from your village. The problem is that the werewolves can also vote. So you can't be sure who's a villager and who's a very convincing werewolf. Werewolves. Your goal is to eliminate all the villagers. Luckily, you start with an advantage. Werewolves know who each other are. So using subtle teamwork, werewolves attempt to kill off villagers one by one and potentially vote them out during the day as well. Doctor. Doctors are on the villager side, helping villagers survive the night. And once per night, the doctor will heal a player. That player cannot die that night. Seer. Also on the villager side is a town seer. The seer also has a special action. Once per night, a seer can see a player's identity. The seer will point to a player, and the moderator will indicate with a thumbs up or down. If the player is a werewolf, thumbs up, or a villager, thumbs down. The game takes place over a series of night and day cycles, starting with night. The night. During the night, actions are taken to eliminate or save villagers. All players, except the moderator, will have their eyes closed during the night and slap their knees to drown out noise. The moderator will then prompt characters to act. The character will open up their eyes, do their action, and then close their eyes once again. Once each character action has occurred, the night is over. The day. Once day breaks, all players open up their eyes, and the moderator identifies which players have been killed that night, and if healed. Then the lying begins. All living players discuss and try to identify the werewolves. A player can accuse another player of being a werewolf. If supported by a second player, the accused can plead their defense for around 30 seconds. Then a vote by majority is then determined whether to kill the accused player. The day ends after an accused werewolf is killed or a set time limit has been passed, regardless of if anyone was killed or not. The night and day cycle will continue until one of two things happen. If all of the werewolves are killed, then the villagers win. But if the number of werewolves is equal to or greater than the number of villagers, the werewolves win. You are now equipped with the basics of how to play a werewolf. Feel free to use whatever means necessary to win. Lie about your identity, act innocent, act too innocent. It's really up to you.
Hi there, Frederick. How are you doing?
Greetings, good sir. Thanks for having me back on the show.
It's always a pleasure speaking to you, Frederick. You are always a happy, pleasant, lively person, positive person to deal with, and it's very lovely. So it's good. It's always good to chat with you. And the bad news is, I think that the hillbilly professor was either kidnapped or was doing kidnapping or something went wrong. But anyway, I'm just joking. The hillbilly professor's got some internet problems and he's not able to join us today. So we're going to have to wing it minus an IQ point or two.
Oh, no. I was looking forward to that. Oh, well.
We'll make some plans. We'll sort out some technical issues. But
I was planning to just sit there and let you two talk, and I was going to drink coffee all afternoon. So now I've got to work.
work. Okay. What's that thing about? There's no rest for the evil, or something like that. Can't remember the exact.
Oh, no rest for the wicked.
No rest for the wicked. Well, you know. Here is Mr. Wicked himself speaking of myself here. And we're always busy. But it's good to be chatting to you again. And there's a bunch of things to talk about. I think the first thing that's on my radar that I'd like your feedback on is any thoughts on the Jewish super crook Sam Bankman-Fried, and the name should really be repronounced as Fried, because maybe that is what the bastard deserves, and FTX and the stealing of billions. I see that the bastard's trial has been on and done quickly, and I still would have liked to listen to the thing, but I just came across mention that it's over and he got 25 years jail time, but he's going to appeal it. And I can see all kinds of Jew garbage going on. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Oh, I have quite a few thoughts. Yeah, that, you know, considering the real magnitude of his crimes under the Constitution, he should have been tried for high crimes and misdemeanors for election interference and fraud and taken out and either shot or hung. But that's just my, you know, North Kakalaki hillbilly opinion of the matter on law enforcement of high crimes of alien, you know, enemy combatants. But yeah, Sam Bankman-Fried, he was tied up in this whole slime mold international chicken swinger money laundering operation. And just like, you know, the Bear Stearns bailouts and all that after, you know, 9/11, you just had this series of breaking down the Glass-Steagall laws, you know, that protected investment banking from regular banking. Yeah, you know, so that's all gone thanks to Obama. And you know, a lot was done by Bill Clinton, friend of Jeffrey Epstein. And so they just paved the way for this centralization of wealth and robbing the middle class that was investing for their retirements, right? And this was just the latest in a series of these. And you know, that this guy was part of all of these Sabbatean and Frankist Jewish sex cults, you know, where everyone belongs to everyone else. And so he was taking all this money he stole from investors and putting it into American elections in the 2020 elections, right? And just, you know, coming in and saturating these, you know, small local elections to completely change the demographic of American leadership. I mean, if you look at everything that's happened with all this synthetic voting, NGO interference in our elections, the 2016 to and 2020 elections basically decimated white male, you know, leadership. Straight white male leadership in the United States at every level. And it was because of somebody like Sam Bankman-Fried working with the George Soros types and the Klaus Schwab types to basically use these fifth generation tactical warfare things using Jewish capital. Jewish capital meaning we just print money up out of nothing, out of thin air, and charge it to the goyim at interest. And we've been running the scam for, you know, 2,000 years. And, you know, people are waking up to it, but at the same time, it just decimated the white working class, middle class of this country, put people that should have had a comfortable retirement now in squalor, right? And the state only wanted 50 years, and he ended up getting 25, but as you and I both know, this is going to be put into some appeals court, probably with a chicken swinger judge, and he's going to get, you know, some nice little plush deal, and it'll be on page 7 of the newspaper if reported at all, and people will just forget about it. But, you know, what he did was, you know, tactically brilliant, diabolically brilliant. But as far as their end games of decimating white male leadership in this country, you know, those last two elections that he was taking part in swinging, you know, totally changed the direction of this, you know, former republic. So anyway, back to you. I don't care much for the guy or his little girlfriend. You know, that's just me. And I bet they went to Jewish summer camp and they played the werewolf mafia game. And I bet they were really good at it. So anyway, back to you.
Yeah, you mentioned that werewolf mafia game. I think I read up about that thing. That is the game. That's like the game that you play where there are a certain number of, I'm not sure if it's werewolves in your group. And then it's the normal people versus the werewolves or something like that. And normally the werewolves win. Is that the game?
Yes. And this game, if you're not familiar with it, go and research, you know, the werewolf or mafia game. It was written by or designed by a Jew in the Soviet Union in the 90s and became a sensation. And it's billed as a game for devious people, right? And it's basically you have a community that is infiltrated by multiple werewolves. And the werewolves know who each other are, but none of the villagers know who the werewolves are. And every night, the werewolves pick a victim, kill it, and then proceed to try to cover it up. And from the game theory perspective, it's all about how a group that has actual information, even a small minority group, will always or most likely win over a large population that don't have the information, that are unknowing. So it's this knowing group versus the unknowing group. And this is the basis of this fifth generation warfare they're running on us, you know, in every white nation. Is you've got these werewolves coming in to these communities with lots of shekels, lots of Marxist training, and they are running warfare on the local community, and the local community do not even know they're there. You know, this is the thing about it, that they come in and suddenly they're community organizers, and they are bringing these groups together with good sounding names to wage war against the heritage white middle class population. And the white middle class population, like the villagers, don't even know that there's a werewolf amongst them. They just know that a lot of bad things are happening and things really suck right now. And yeah, that's the old thing of there's a shadow over the land. When you have vampires and werewolves controlling everything in the shadows, it's not going to go well for you until the vampires and the werewolves are rooted out. So one of the things as a game theory guy and a game developer myself is to take this guy's model and add the card of a Van Helsing, so that you introduce this individual that also knows and can hunt down the werewolves, right? And see how quickly the dynamics change, because in Solomon Ash's group conformity experiments, where he had a compromised authority figure up front and a compromised peer group, that if they could completely control the information, the knowing versus the unknowing, they could convince up to 74% of the villagers, the goyim, of their lie. You know, they total deceive the villagers with their lie up to 74%. But if you introduced one truth advocate into that echo chamber, that number dropped from 74% to less than 5%. So yeah, that's why I want to introduce the Van Helsing character to the werewolf game, to see if we can't change the dynamics a little bit. So back to you.
Okay, we got a bit sidetracked on that, but it was a very interesting sidetrack. I like all kinds of technical, intellectual, and mathematical type of concepts, because I did look into this thing, and exactly as you say, that it's basically boils down to information versus lack of information. People having an information edge, defeating those who don't have the information. And you know, there are many, many things that I observe in white societies and Western societies that when I look at it, I say to myself, you know, these things that these Jews and liberals are asking for, these things are gonna harm the country. Like, notice how everything in Western society, in white countries, has to be open. It's got to be open and public. But if you go back to the Jews, especially to that book that I still need to do, but bear with me for a little bit later, because I've got I've got other more pressing priorities for the next month or two. But I want to return to that book, The Jews, by that Frenchman, Hilaire Belloc. Hilaire Belloc goes on at quite tremendous length about the Jewish penchant for secrecy. So Jews always hiding their stuff, but Jews are running around telling whites to open up their stuff so that everybody knows what whites and white government and white this is doing, but they are keeping their stuff silent. And, you know, this is what actually puts white society at a tremendous disadvantage. Whites are open and honest and are willing to bring out their stuff for everybody to see and everyone to benefit from, right down to all kinds of things. Everything in government, the military, the budgets, the everything is supposed to be open and people can check it. But Jewish stuff is never visible, and Jews are always hiding Jewish stuff. And you're right. You know, when I look at Jews, it's the enemy within. It's the enemy within, and the common man doesn't know there's a war being waged against him in his own society by an alien species that is well embedded inside his society. And one thing that I did hear about Hitler is the Germans had the Gestapo, which is like a secret police, and Hitler authorized the Gestapo to hunt down any secret societies. Secret societies must go. And the more I look at everything in our civilization, All kinds of secret societies need to go, whether it's Jews with secret societies, Freemasons, or anything else, because I cannot see that that's a good thing in a white Western country. If you are to have an open society, you can't have these weirdos operating in secrecy. There is nothing that they should know or be able to do that must be kept secret. And I tell you, Frederick, the more I look at lots of things, the more I say to myself, there are things that are being done in business, big business, and Jews and Freemasons and so forth. And I say to myself, you know what? All of these people are getting all kinds of advantages, and the big losers are the common people. And the common people cannot function and cannot compete against these others. And the amount of power that certain of these groups are getting, and these groups are not loyal to these countries, you know? So if you got any further comments.
Oh, definitely. You know, the Gestapo was the Van Helsings. That's what you have to get your head around. The Jewish media try to make the Gestapo out to be the evil organization, but what they were doing is projecting what the Bolshevik Cheka and the NKVD were. You know, they were actually mostly sadistic homosexual Jews that liked to dress in black leather and completely terrorize innocent white Christians and, you know, murder them in the most horrific ways for the sake of doing it. You know, that was that Zabatean Francis Maccabee insanity of, you know, I'm punishing Amalek for what they did to us, right? The Gestapo was the Van Helsings in that they were tracking down the secret societies, the hidden cabals that were skewing German life against the German people. And when you break this down to the game theory, you know, Europeans are big into open source shareware. You know, it's you figure something out to make people's lives better and the people share it. You know, you get the idea of, well, I should be compensated for my brilliance of coming up with something new. And so then you get into the idea of trademarking, copywriting, and patenting your acts of genius. The Jewish mindset is not shareware at all. It is all about proprietary systems, black box, that black cube of Saturn that they worship. And, you know, and you look at these Zabatean Francus, you know, rabbis out there with their leather straps on and that little, you know, Tephilim icon, that little black cube on their heads, right? You know, that is this idea of the hidden hand, the secret power system, the mafia, the great mafia that is the slime mold of Judaism, that they're all working together for their common good, right? And that is a complete different mindset to the European mindset, you know, the white people mindset. And yeah, this is why it's always been the other since, you know, the time of the Neanderthals and Homo sapiens sapiens. You know, these two have been different. They look similar, but, you know, racial awareness, you know, there is race differences and they are very, very different than us. And, you know, just, and we see, you know, what they're doing to us. And so, yes, and it's interesting that John F. Kennedy, one of the last speeches he made before he was assassinated by this international slime mall clique of rootless cosmopolitans was the secret society speech, that secret societies have no place in American politics, right? And so, you know, this idea of going after the secret societies, they always demonize them. And, you know, the Gestapo's demonized also the Spanish Inquisition. The Spanish Inquisition was formed because of the evidence of what these Zabatean Francus Jews were actually doing. They got caught you know, doing satanic blood rituals, doing usury, doing blackmail, all of these things that is associated. But, you know, the Spanish Inquisition is demonized as being oh so horrible, but the Czech and the NKVD and thing, the Jewish mafia, the Illuminati are never mentioned in a bad light from Hollywood. So, hey, back to you.
Yeah, very interesting, Frederick. Returning to your comments about Sam Bankman-Fried, the Jew, I must tell you that I was following the FTX stuff as it went down. And, you know, that Jew, he also stole hundreds of millions of dollars. There was stuff that he did that people were tracking because most of these cryptos are open. And if you know where to go, you can actually track the transactions. And people actually watched. I can't remember if he stole $600 million or $900 million, but he personally transferred somewhere between $600 and $900 million out of FTX to his own stuff at a particular time. I'm not sure if he did it like in a morning or in a day, but people were tracking this stuff. He knew that things were going wrong and his stuff was going to go down. And here he is busy pumping out vast amounts of money off to his own private sources. So that Jew must have walked away with, you know, he could have like personally, my guess, unless you got more info, but my guess is that that guy has personally pocketed like close to $1 billion himself personally. Out of all the other stuff, over and above the fact, of course, that he had so much money that he was buying assets for himself and for his parents, etc. So the vast amount of money that this disgusting, filthy little Jew rat, with the assistance of mommy and daddy, I think, I'm not sure if both of them were professors, with the assistance of mommy and daddy and all the crooked things that he had to do, and I must tell you that I was telling someone in South Africa, I was telling a young lady in South Africa when this went down, I said to her, oh, by the way, you know, if you want to see a big crime, because we were talking about crime, if you want to see a really huge crime that's going down now, you know, just look up FTX. And then I just quickly summarized it for her and I said, you know, this is going to wipe out people's nest eggs. Huge amounts of money. Those people will never see their cash again, et cetera, et cetera. And this young woman, this young white woman said to me, she said, man, you know, if somebody does a crime like that, they should be executed. And I said to her, yeah, I think so too. You know, if you play fast and loose with the life savings of other people, then I think that you should be smacked good and hard. Now, you brought up the term of high crimes and misdemeanors. I don't think we have such a thing in South Africa because we are part of like the British system, and I've never heard that term. Maybe we have something similar, but it's maybe with other wording. But I got to tell you that I'm very much in line with you on the idea that, you know, if you engage in certain types of crimes, there must be something for really big crimes. And I'm at this point just talking about big crimes that, you know, it's one thing to defraud somebody of say $200,000 or $1 million. But if you start stealing in the billions and billions, I think there should be a special kind of punishment for you. And that is over and above the fact that, as you said, he should be charged with high crimes and misdemeanors for the damage that he's done to your political system. So I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume that he was only indicted on fraud charges, never mind all the other charges that he could have been indicted on. I must tell you, when I just sit and think about it, and I think about the brazen way in which it was done, the bullshit that he's come up with, all of it, you can see that all of his methods and stuff. He's been talking to mommy and daddy. Everything about what he did shows premeditation, actually, because him going and operating from the Caribbean, for example, if you look at that already indicates that he was setting up a business in a corrupt black, in a small corrupt black nation, which gets him away from some of the legal requirements, the United States law. So when I look at his thing, all of his stuff shows premeditation, thinking ahead, laying plans, executing stuff. So he's busy sucking money into the Caribbean where certain American laws can't apply. Then he comes back with other money that now comes from that to go and mess inside American politics. Even his hairstyle and stuff, you know, he's got the Afro type of hairstyle. And if you look at him and the way that he's approached the blacks, even I can't remember that stupid old black woman that's in the Democratic part, in the Democrats. But you can see that this guy's been angling himself to play the blacks, and the blacks are just loving it. And, you know, I must tell you, when I look at him, I see method, I see premeditation, lots of indication of premeditation, foreknowledge, etc. And for him to get away, you know, even the 25-year jail sentence, which I agree with you, I don't think that he's going to be able to, I don't think that that's where this is going to end. He's going to make this shorter. He's going to get years cut off. You know, he should have had at least the 50 years that the state originally wanted. But, you know, there's so much bullshit that's been introduced into the laws everywhere that, you know, I agree with you. He's going to get a soft landing. It's going to, and you're not even going to hear about it. And he's probably already had a lot of soft landings already, because I think for part of the time, he might even have been at his parents' house, you know, when he should be under arrest and in jail, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. And, you know, he was charged with 7 counts of fraud, conspiracy, and money laundering, but not any high crimes and misdemeanors. And, you know, by all accounts, this was a terrorist attack at, you know, white America by this Jewish Maccabee. And, you know, this is how you have to view this, that this is the chutzpah of, we are going to tear down America so that we can replace it with a Soviet state. Yeah, this is the mindset of these young Maccabee Jews, that always promoted himself as the ethical altruist philanthropist. So this is the other thing, is this entire generation of these Marxist Jews that are carrying out warfare, but calling it philanthropy. Here in the high country of North Kakalaki, we have the Leon Levine Foundation, who was the guy behind the Family Dollar, you know, price gouging, weaponized merchandise network here in the southern United States, and the Schaefer-Kikedike twins, you know, whose daddy got his ill-gotten billions from running all of these Claire stores and the malls around the world to, you know, basically condition young girls to dress like prostitutes, right? It's like, this is, but they have come here as philanthropists to Tikkun Olamas and just dump money on everything, switch all the local elections to get in progressive candidates that promote immigration to the area, things like that. And just, you know, you just see this mindset of them, that the ends justify the means with these people. And, you know, he got caught But, you know, he's like Jonathan Pollard to these people. He is, you know, wow, you did so much damage to America. You know, we applaud you. They're going to make, I'm sure someday they will probably have a statue in Israel for, you know, Bankman-Fried, like Jonathan Pollard and Meyer Lansky, you know, and all these other heroes of, you know, the movement, right? But yeah, this is the mindset of these guys, is they think they are fixing the world and anything they do is justified. And when it comes to white people, because the Holocaust and because all the persecution for 2,000 years, we deserve to suffer. You know, we deserve to have our life savings stolen from us. We deserve to have our way of life completely destroyed, because this is a vengeful people. They are not a forgiving people. They want revenge on things that happened in their minds. So back to you.
Yeah. Well said. What happened in their minds? Because these are a people who have all kinds of junk that they refer to as reality, but it's not reality at all. And they are a real miserable bunch of people. But I must say that I think like what you were saying, this guy really should have ended his life executed. Honestly, when I see some of the devastating super crimes that have been committed by Jews, even like that Bernie Madoff and stuff. If people deliberately go to steal from other people on a grand scale, and then they laugh about it in jail, and this Jew is going to come out one day. He's young. He's going to come out and he's going to be stunningly rich, and he's probably going to be busy corrupting people all the way while he's in jail and all that, or what you can call jail, because it's not really going to be the same as if a white guy got jail time. But I just look at these things and I say that when you have such a total disregard for other people's property, etc., because among whites, all through our history, and you can look at any white society that's ever existed, we have an important requirement that we don't steal from each other. We don't steal from each other, and we punish it quite harshly. People have even been executed for certain kinds of stealing in the past. I'm not sure. I think even people who stole horses, I think they even used to execute things like a horse thief and stuff like that. Now, if in the past it was good enough for us, we regarded a horse as a thing that's important enough to execute somebody over, then, you know, if people are stealing billions and billions, I really think that there needs to be some punishment for that. But the more I look at Jews, Frederick, the more I think that there have to be special laws for Jews. If you have them in your society, you must, at a minimum, have laws for them specifically. And I will add in what Napoleon said after his attempts to deal with Jews and to solve the Jewish problem, where Napoleon said, "Jews must be presumed guilty until they can prove their innocence." So maybe you even need to follow Napoleon's thinking, and it should be a case of, when in doubt, charge Jews with a crime, have a special court for Jews where if the Goyim charges the Jews with a crime, and the Jews have to produce the evidence to prove that they didn't commit the crime. and that would turn this whole thing totally on its head. And I have a lot of respect for Napoleon. If that was Napoleon's conclusion, then I think there's much to be said for that, that it should be that way. But
well, you think in the Byzantine Empire from 330 to 1453, until they were overrun by the Ottomans, with Jewish capital backing the Ottomans, it was prohibited, you know, if Jews lived in your lands, and that was how it was phrased. You know, if you have Jews living in your lands, they are not allowed to take part in government. They're not allowed to take part in education. They're not allowed to take part in banking. You know, basically, it was a containment prophylactic measure to protect the population from a predatory species. And you know, that kept them in check. And you think, you know, after that time, the fall of the Byzantine Empire, you know, how Jews have run roughshod like werewolves and vampires across Europe. And getting thrown out of country after country after country for the same thing, because this is how they're hardwired. They are wired differently than Europeans are. And like I said, they are a vengeful culture, and they see us as cattle, and they think that we do not deserve to have any private property, that everything belongs to them. They are the gods of the planet, and we just have to learn to accept that. And, you know, I'm against it, as we say. So back to you. Oh, and Bernie Madoff's big crime was, it was fine when he was ripping off the Goyim, but he started ripping off fellow Jews, and that violates the mitzvahs. And so he had to be made an example of. So, yeah, that was a big thing that Bernie Madoff, you know, he's now a Moser in the eyes of the Jewish people because, you know, he did something bad.
Oh, okay. Yes, because only Jewish lives matter and only Jewish money matters. Only Jewish possessions matter. Well, those laws that you are citing, are those Justinian's laws against the Jews?
I would have to double check. That sounds right, but I just know that those were the main things. And when you go back and read that letter of 1489, the letter from the Grand Sanhedrin, where it says, you know, infiltrate, make your daughters, you know, your sons become doctors and apothecaries and merchants and blah, blah, blah. It was basically the reaction to those Byzantine Empire laws that said they can't be here, 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 and here. And in this letter in 1489, the Grand Sanhedrin says, infiltrate here, 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 and here. Right. And it's interesting that in the run up to Theodor Herzl's big Zionist push in the 1890s, that letter was reproduced by the Rothschilds as a battle cry for Zionism. Right. And so you just see this, you know, militant nature of Zionism as an infiltration of all white nations, but done in the shadows and done using economic warfare and soft power versus hard power, like militaries. You know, they use our militaries against us, right? But they're controlling using soft power, spells and contracts and legalese and money. You know, that's their wheelhouse of power.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I suspect that those are Justinian's laws. I don't know for sure, but those laws make perfect sense, and those laws definitely are applicable right now. That is definitely needed. And thanks for explaining the Bernie Madoff thing. But yeah, it's like you also mentioned the Jew Pollard. The Jew Pollard should have ended his life. He should have ended his life executed by the U.S. government. Really, that he committed insane treason and damage to the United States. Well, by the way, what Pollard did was probably even worse than what Nelson Mandela and the Jews did in the Rivonia trial in South Africa, and they were charged with high treason, and they should all have been hung. The blacks and the Jews should all have been hung, but that's a whole other story. I'll tell that story as a separate thing, or maybe later in the year. I've been meaning to tell it for the last year, but yeah, some very important stuff. I want to ask you something about what Americans learn in school, and since you and I are not spring chickens, I'd like to ask you, what did you learn in history when you were a kid or what did your father learn when he was a kid regarding America as a colony, whites from Europe coming to America, colonizing it, expanding, fighting the Indians, taking over the country. What did whites learn in the past about that, how to view that? What did you learn? And then what do you know about what the kids are learning today? Or has it been the same all throughout?
Oh, that is a particularly sensitive topic, given that my father, you know, was from these Appalachian Mountains. My family, you know, goes back to colonial times here, and the same with Atma. And you know, she was born here, went to schools here, went to college at Appalachian State University, Teachers College, got her teaching certification, taught for 32 years at the same school in this little mountain community, retired, and now sees what is happening after 9/11 with this slime mold invasion of this community, especially the university and the local media. You had Adams Publishing buy up all these struggling newspapers in the Appalachian Mountain Range after 9/11, and just turn them into progressive left-wing propaganda outlets that literally censor all the locals. You know, the locals no longer have a voice. It's complete cancel culture. And then at Appalachian State University, where my father did both his undergraduate and graduate work before working for the community college system in this area, these are a series of junior colleges outside the university system. And, you know, what you see in the transition, once this shift of education happened, it became our proud heritage. You know, children were taught our proud heritage to now our shameful heritage, where everything is about shaming. This gets back to that Pavlovian beat generation, you know, bad dog, bad dog, bad dog. Everything about America is bad. The founding fathers are bad. And yeah, this is that psychological warfare that came out of the Frankfurt School. It's, you know, this Talmud, it goes back forever. This is part of that Jewish mindset of criticizing the inferior Goyim, right? But, you know, they really weaponized it with the Frankfurt School, using mass communication and infiltration of these schools to make them, instead of public schools, government schools. And so you see the children now are conditioned, not educated. They're taught what to think, not how to think. And again, that whole thing of our proud heritage, no, 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 you cannot be proud of anything you are. Your whole race is shameful. You should just die. And you're responsible for slavery. It had nothing to do with the Jews. The Jews are never, ever, ever mentioned in government education. It's lying by omission. But every critical theory thing they can find about any hero of the past, that is what the children are taught, to tear them down. Then the other thing is this big lie of equality and diversity and inclusivity, that you have to bring in this rainbow nation, as the ADL trademarked it back in the 50s, a nation of immigrants, to get this idea of you have to accept everything. And if you don't accept it, you're being intolerant. And teachers have become these social justice warrior, intolerant tolerance enforcers, where they are just complete authoritarians, and they see the children as coming to them broken from their family systems, and it's their jobs as teachers to fix them and re-educate them from all the things their family think is wrong. and they give each other awards for this foolishness that they're calling education. It's amazing, you know, how full of it they are that they actually think this is a better way to do education now. And it's just maddening to see this university that was built by the white people of Appalachian to provide quality teachers for the Appalachian region, to have it completely weaponized against that same demographic. You know, Jezebel Everett's on their mission statement for the university, that's a taxpayer-funded university, says their job is to create global citizens. You know, and that is about as globo homo as you can get. You know, they say they're all inclusive and, you know, they accept diversity in every way, shape, or form. But one of the first things she did after Charlottesville was to ban the group Identity Europa from campus and define them as a hate group. And the Watauga Democrat and the Appalachian media, all Jewish controlled, all set out to make these hit pieces on Identity Europa and brought in the ADL and the NAACP and the SPLC to justify demonizing the Heritage Appalachian demographic that built the school and the people that are paying their salaries, right? And this is the chutzpah that these invaders have. They have just moved in and redefined education completely. And, you know, same thing with health care. They have weaponized health care, especially under COVID. I call it COVID 9/11 because it was just another operation from these people. But, you know, that's basically my nutshell of where education is. And that's why I have developed, you know, my Hills and Holes game as a supplement to, you know, this education system. And, you know, to try to convince people that it's much better to homeschool your children than to send them to these government schools. So back to you.
Yes, I definitely agree. Homeschooling is the way to go. Hey? I'll tell you some. I've got personal stories that I can tell of Americans that, including Americans I knew personally very well, and how I observed that these whites knew the truth. They knew the truth about Jews and race, and they had their children, and they obviously must have taught their children what they know, because they were very, very pro-white. And yet when they died, their children were clearly liberals. That you have children, but you don't realize it, but when you send your child to school, your child is going to be turned into a white-hating communist. And the child's going to hate you, and the child's going to have no respect for you, and the child's going to hate the country as well. It's actually horrific. I want to just ask you, you say that children used to be taught about the proud heritage of America. Can you give me an example of what they used to be taught?
Well, you know, mainly the idea that the great experiment was this, you know, divinely inspired experiment in self-rule that had never been done before. And it's this idea of a peer-to-peer distributed power system of open source government, where it's all out in the public as a reaction to that Rothschild, Zabatian, Frankist, black box, star chamber type justice system that had infiltrated Europe, especially England. You know, you think, you know, the City of London and the Bank of England, you know, they have had the English under their control for a very long time. And so you see this Declaration of Independence, you know, independence from what? And you say, okay, that was July 4th, 1776. But what they don't teach you is on May 1st, you know, on Beltane, the Illuminati was formed with the Rothschilds, you know, Adam Weishaupt and Jacob Frank, who declared himself the reincarnation of Zabotai Zevi. And it was this idea of evil is more powerful than good, and we're going to rule the world with evil, and the ends justify the means. And you know, you see the colonists that, you know, were saying, we want to be independent of all of that. We just want to do our thing. And much like the Germans in the 30s, you know, we just want to be independent. We want you out of our countries, right? And so this idea that the Revolutionary War was fought for good things, right? And now it's, you know, oh, you are just colonizers. You had this idyllic culture. That's the big lie, is the noble savages never did anything wrong, the Native Americans, as they call. And that's the big lie, because when you actually look at the archaeological records, European, white Europeans were in North America, especially in the Appalachian Range, thousands of years before the Asiatics came across, right, that now are considered the Native Americans. And the reality is that when the Asiatics came in, they genocided the white population. And this is the big, you know, thing of why the Eastern tribes usually have more civilized manners than the Western tribes, and higher technologies like the Cherokee and the Iroquois, you know, were much more advanced than the Western tribes like the Apache and the Shawnee, et cetera. You know, so you just get race realism. And you also see that a lot of the white Europeans were interbred with the Asiatics to form these hybrids, you know, on the East Coast of the United States. So, you know, that is completely left out. And that's the biggest thing of these teachers is, you know, to lie by omission, because in their curriculum, they have, you know, you're not allowed to talk about this fact, and this fact. You know, you just don't go there in these curriculums. And I think, you know, one of the most fiendish things is the education is completely emasculated, that when you children were growing up in, you know, anything before the 1960s, your leadership was all male. Your principals of your schools were male. You know, the vice principal was male. The coaches were male. You had male teachers in the classrooms. And that completely started shifting in the 70s with the feminism of independent women saying, I can be a teacher. That would be a good career for me. And then I won't have to have any man telling me what to do. And I'll be able to help those poor children. And so you just see feminism moving into these schools and completely emasculating the young men, you know, removing them from any male role models and being shamed as a matter of course by all these cultural Marxist teachers, you know. And that, so that's, I guess, one of the things I was thought about with the education of, you know, this idea of, you know, you send your kid there and they're going to convince that child that's looking for, you know, authorization, that's looking for, you know, am I doing this right? You know, saying, you know, am I a good person? And they're going to be told that everything about their family unit is wrong. Their parents are bad. You know, their grandparents were bad. And this is just the mindset. And the teachers just think that they're so virtuous for, you know, being, you know, this self-destructive altruism or pathological altruism, that we're going to care about every other group except our own, because thinking about our own group is bad. You know, and that is the mindset that is instilled in these students. And you just see the results that, you know, all the young males are either becoming homosexuals or they're just getting strung out on drugs and committing suicide, etc. You know, the, you know, death, the suicide rate of young males in the United States is astronomical. It's one of those things that's not talked about. And it's just these young men that grew up in these feminist single mom households, possibly from multiple daddy baby situations, and no positive males, and the mom constantly saying all men are bad, all men are bad. They see this reflected in the media that all white men are bad, they're all colonializers bad, and they're just self-destructing. You know, just like Pavlov dogs, they would just lay down and die, and just howl in pain. And, that's what you see. And I used to do sound in, clubs and such. And one of the things was I was working at this big club in Wilmington called The Soapbox. And on Saturdays, they would have these all ages shows in the afternoons. And you would see these bands come in and these young men just howling, I don't even know if I would call it music, but just howling. And this was, the music that these people were listening to, I just, found that, that this generation has just been beaten down. That's part of that learned helplessness from yet another Jewish scientist of, how you can condition somebody to just give up. And so I see that as infecting our education system dramatically. So back to you.
That's very interesting. You've mentioned a bunch of things, some of which I'd like to return to in future shows. But very, very interesting. The breaking down of whites is unquestionably what's going on, and it has been going on for a long time. And the more I look at things, the more I ask myself about things in the past. Why did whites accept this? Why did that thing happen? And so on. There's plenty of very interesting questions. But the breaking down of whites in general, but white males in particular, that is unquestionable. And ultimately, Frederick, I'm quite convinced that the only way to really fix society is to start with the white males. If the white males don't get fixed, then nothing else will be fixed. And the women will not be able to change society because women go with the flow. The only thing that changes society is men. That is a historical fact. That's the bottom line. Because ultimately, men have to stand up and men have to direct things. And if the men are broken, then nothing will come right. Nothing will come right. That's my own firm view on that. Are there any particular topics? We've been talking for quite a while. Are there any particular things you'd like to discuss or ask?
Well, one of the things that I'm very curious about to get your take on is the series of recent events between the ongoing genocide in Gaza, the UN, the United Nations vote on ceasefire, where for the first time the United States abstained versus vetoing anything critical of Israel, the Moscow terrorist attacks, and then the accident and the Baltimore Francis Scott Key Bridge that was completely destroyed by the tanker, the Dolly. And so do you see, are any of those events breaking your radar there in South Africa? And if so, do you see any patterns between those events?
Okay, I actually don't worry what the mass media says in South Africa. I never listen to the mass media of South Africa because it's just total crap, and I have no interest in their angles. I always keep a lookout for my own news, and I decide my own priorities. The more I do these things, and the more I think, the more convinced I am that much of the stuff that what you're hearing is not prioritized according to the importance that it needs to have. But okay, let me give you a few quick thoughts. I'm not an expert on any of these topics, but I have just briefly glanced at them. The first and most important one is the Gaza one. The fact that the United States to, as far as I understand, the United States always vetoes things that protect Israel, and that this is the first time ever that the United States has not used its veto. And I'm very impressed by that. But one little thing that I just heard about, I didn't look into it in more detail, was that, and correct me if I'm wrong on any of these things, I heard that the United States was building some kind of port there by Gaza. Is that correct?
I am hearing chatter about that, and the justification is to get humanitarian aid in more effectively and more safely than the airdrop tactics they're using now. So that's what I've heard.
Okay. Well, when I looked at that, I'll tell you what I walk away with, is that it looks to me like the United States, despite all its madness and silliness, it looks to me like the United States is distancing itself, the government is distancing itself somewhat from Israel itself, because it shows that they are not just buying into all the Israeli Jewish stuff. When I heard of that talk of the port, I thought that is quite astounding. I thought that, you know, diplomatic stuff is very soft. You know, it's all very soft and very, very sort of well-mannered. That's how diplomats speak. But it really shows that there is some kind of anti-Israel situation there. Not that it's a wonderful situation, but because I'm not being the racist that I am, I'm not that crazy about running around supporting other non-whites. But in this case, these are non-whites that are against Israel, and these Jew scum are a whole other topic by themselves. So, yeah, I thought it shows a distancing from Israel and just slavishly, you know, licking the feet of Israel. I thought that was a good thing. And the fact that the veto on the Gaza peace proposal, that is huge. I think that is huge. That, again, the fact that the United States always vetoing for Israel and now distancing itself from Israel, that says to me also that the Jews are losing the information war regarding this Hamas thing. And I must say that the Hamas war and the ability of the Jews to finally be losing an information war, I think this is huge, huge. This is something I never saw coming from the Hamas war. I'm very impressed with this Hamas war, how a tiny bunch of Arabs plus their buddies are managing to actually keep these damn Jew scum busy, and much of the world is actually turning against them. It's not just non-whites, it's whites as well, even the British, I mean, good God. And so for me, to me, all the Hamas-related Gaza stuff is not good for Israel. And I find it quite astounding that the United States has made these moves. That amazes me. I think it's great, great news. The Moscow thing, I actually did a show with some European pals of mine, and I immediately asked the question of whether Ukraine could be behind it. They had quite a lot more detail, and they definitely did not think it was Ukraine or war-related. But there are a few weird things there, in that there seems to have been a breakdown in secrecy on the Moscow side. There could be other games going on there, but I did not dig further. The Baltimore, that bridge in Baltimore, I looked at that, and that is quite an amazing thing. I'd never imagined that that a massive, massive bridge like that would just collapse like that in a second. And it is a very strange event. The only thing that I heard is that engineers say that something went wrong with the ship and they lost power and the ship was out of control. But it is quite a horrific thing that an entire bridge that big just freaking went down. So I do wonder about it, but I don't know enough. And by the way, shouldn't there be quite a death toll? Because, I mean, anyone who was on that bridge, most of them must have died. I haven't heard anyone mention the death toll, but there could be some questions there. Do you have any thoughts on the above?
Oh, the bridge thing is just, you know, physically impossible. And again, that idea of, okay, once you've eliminated the impossible, whatever remains has to be the truth, no matter how improbable. And when you just break it down from, you know, the name of the ship is a foreign flag ship, had a Ukrainian captain, an Indian crew, and it's called the Dolly, and you see it make a U-turn, and then you see it lose power, get power back, lose power, get power back. Then you see the engines rev up in a huge plume of smoke that, okay, they are accelerating, and you see it make a beeline, veer off course. You know, Newton's law says you got to remain on that same vector until you're acted on by something else, right? Well, Newton's law suddenly shifted that ship directly to the center beam. And even the mass of the ship at that velocity and how that center pylon was over engineered for just that sort of thing, that yes, you're going to have a case where a ship is going to hit one of these piers. We have to engineer it to be able to withstand up to a certain amount of force. Well, you see this ship hit and the bridge just immediately collapse all the way across. And if you look, you will see flash points at every one of the key points of that particular, you know, the statics and dynamics of that type of suspension bridge. At the key, you know, load-bearing points, you see these flashes of light. And people say, well, that was the power line snapping that were run across there for the lights. And it's like, well, maybe, but I would sure like to see those pieces of metal to inspect them for thermite or thermate charges. And then the other aspect of this is you always have heroes in these stories. Well, this time, instead of the 9/11 firefighters and first responders being the heroes, you have the bridge workers that were there to fix the potholes. And the storyline goes that before the ship loses, or as the ship's losing control, they send out an SOS, and this somehow gets to the workers on the bridge, and they're able to stop the traffic to prevent mass casualties. And it's like, well, that's a pretty remarkable feat of instant, you know, response team, you know, that there's a ship sending an SOS out, and, you know, instantly the bridge workers that are supposedly all, you know, immigrants magically know to stop traffic. And so you didn't have a mass life. But amazingly, some of the bridge workers were lost, right? So you have the sacrifice part of the story. And, you know, so it's like, okay, that's kind of suspicious. And then the, you know, finale to me was when Joe Biden comes on hours after the event and says that this is a horrible accident, You know, so no investigation has been taking place yet, but they have officially declared that there was no malintent. This was a horrible accident of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and the United States government, you know, is going to step in and pay for everything to be rebuilt. This would keep that pesky investigation from happening from the insurance company, because the ship should be liable. And so their insurance, whoever's underwriting that ship, should have been sued for damages. But they would require an extensive investigation as to what happened and to determine if it was organic or synthetic, right? You know, by the U.S. government stepping in and saying we're going to pay for everything, that bypasses it. And we all remember on 9/11/2001, before the towers even fell, you had Jew supremacist Jerome Hauer on the MSNBC and CNN, and you had Ehud Barak, former Unit 269 guy, former Prime Minister of Israel, who came to the United States to get out of politics in the run-up to 9/11, and just happened to, you know, be working with some very curious companies, like the kind of companies that, you know, build the thermite charges for demolition, that kind of thing. So he's on the BBC in London, saying that, oh, this is Osama bin Laden, oh, this is Al-Qaeda. Right. And there's no investigation has happened. So they're just, you know, immediately getting a jump on the story, that power of suggestion. Most people, they're going to believe the first thing they hear, even if later you get information that contradicts that. They're still going to go with that original story. So this is part of the PSYOP, is to feed you the official narrative, you know, and you will accept it, and then anybody who doesn't go with the official narrative, you will say that they're just a horrible conspiracy theorist, not patriotic, not sympathetic to the loss. How dare you? How dare you? How dare you? Kind of thing. And so those were just some of the things that really jumped out at me. And so it's like, okay. Oh, and I guess the topper is when they come out and say, oh, by the way, 2 minutes of the black boxes on the ship are missing, have been deleted. So right when the course changes was happening, we just happened to lose all of that data. So, you know, you say, okay, was this, you know, cyber hacking, you know, that you can take control of it, any type of vehicle, and make it do your will and erase the evidence, right? And who would have the capability to do that? And it's a small hand of players. You would have somebody like the NSA, CIA, Israel's Unit 269. Those are the one, not Unit 269, but Unit 8200. Those are, and also the Russian, you know, they are very advanced in their cyber warfare. So, you know, my take was, are they going to try to somehow blame this on Russia? And yeah, that this was a response to the Moscow bombing, that they were blaming on the United States, and also the Nord Stream line, you know. And I was shocked when Biden came out and said, we've determined this is an accident, not Russian interference, because that seems to be the go-to. Anytime something happens, it was Russian interference with that dastardly Putin, right? So that was what I thought was, you know, the highlights of what, you know, hit my radar is, you know, no, that's questionable, that's questionable, that's questionable. So back to you.
That's very interesting stuff. So you're basically saying, the 9/11 bridge. Well, if you get more video and stuff and analysis where someone digs into it and produces a video, I'd like to watch that. You're mentioning lots.
Yeah, one of the other things I thought very key was the first day after it happened, people, when they're talking about, we're going to rebuild the bridge, we're going to rebuild, but so, you know, Francis Scott Key, the man who wrote the Star Spangled Banner, that was based on the battle that happened right there during the War of 1812. You know, now it's questionable if they need to rename the bridge after him, because turns out he was a racist who owned slaves. So that's problematic for mostly black Baltimore now. So the blacks, the angry blacks in Baltimore, don't want it named after the racist, you know, person who wrote our national anthem. So that's the other twist of the story.
Ah, so so maybe the bridge is going to be renamed after Oprah or Martin Luther
King. St. George Floyd official. You know.
George Floyd, yes. Oh, my God. You know, I was in Baltimore in 2019. When I went to the Fash Bash, we drove through Baltimore a bit, and it's like a lot of American places. It's beautiful, except there were quite a lot of blacks around, but not as many as I saw in Memphis and Atlanta. But it's dreadful what's happening to your cities. And you're losing out on your culture. The whites are being driven. Everything white is being driven out of your culture. It's horrific what's happening to you. But that is terrible. It would be terrible to have some bridge rebuilt and, you know, some other black bullshit brought in. And like you say, it's going to be named after someone else. But you do raise a bunch of very interesting issues there, Frederick. If ever anyone does a sort of 9/11 architects, engineers type of video on this, I'd be very interested. And that black box stuff, that sounds very, very dodgy there. There's a bunch of issues you raise there. That is definite. And the fact that the bridge had to have been built to be stronger than that, how come the whole thing just collapsed like a pack of cards, like 9/11? You raise a bunch of thoughts that I've not thought or even considered. But I did notice the whole thing just falling apart in like a second. And that did seem kind of dodgy to me. But, you know, raising some questions here. So I'd be very interested if any more engineering stuff comes out relating this. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, and from what I'm seeing in the truth community is that nobody's buying the official story that bridge would structurally collapse in free fall like it did, just like World Trade Center 7. You know, it's like, well, you know, you've got this moving object coming in at this angle to this pylon that's reinforced. How would that steel structure that's reinforced with concrete, shouldn't it bend out to a snapping point rather than this domino effect where it went bink and then all the key structure points went flash and fell straight down? You know, that was so the physics doesn't line up to me with a single point of action. You know, that this was just the ship impacting that center pylon caused stress here. Again, I want to see those end pieces where the bridge snapped that had those flash points that they say was just the electrical cable snapping. You know, I want to see that, you know, analyzed for residue of thermite or thermate. You know, so there's just so many things about that. And I guess the other horrifying thing as far as the Kalergi plan of blotting out Amalek, you know, the white people of all white nations, is the response on the media where you see the mayor come out. He's an angry black man who hates white people. The chief of police, the chief of the fire department, they're all blacks, you know, black women, black men. Then you go all the way up to the governor, and it's like everybody in this power system is an incompetent black person that's being handled by this Jewish AIPAC system. And they're just out there reading scripts. They have no real leadership. you know, they're just being handled and they're just openly hostile to white people, but yet it's a complete failed state. You know, in Baltimore, no children pass the minimum math proficiency in some of the schools. You know, this is the level of degradation we've had in these systems here, high crime rate, but yet they're trying to figure out a way to blame white people on this problem, right? And you know, it just, and you trace these people back, they all came out of nowhere and suddenly they were put in positions of power after the 2016 and 2020 elections by people like Sam Bankman-Fried. They just came in with sacks of money and said, you know, you have charisma, you know, you can, you know, we can use you. You just have to do what we say and we'll make you famous. We'll give you power. You know, you have what you want. You just do what we say in our war against, you know, heritage America and the, you know, whole idea of the Constitution. Then the other thing is that most of these people hate the Constitution. They just do not think that America should be continued to run under something made by slave owners, right? That's the thing, is the fruit of the poison tree, because these people who developed this republic had slaves. It automatically negates any positive aspect of their creation. We have to just throw it away because they were bad people because they had slaves. And this is the mindset of these people. But yet they're elected to positions of power because of name recognition and the Edward Bernays' promotion. You know, Jews know how to groom people to sell them. This is what they do for thousands of years. So I just thought that was some interesting surrounding information.
That is very, very interesting. You know, I of course didn't know any of that stuff. But I must tell you that it horrifies me. Something that really horrifies me about America is the number of blacks in politics. I'm sure that black people in American politics and as mayors and all kinds of government positions, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you have statistics, I'm sure that blacks are overrepresented in politics in your country, that their percentage of the population versus their percentage in everything from mayors and upwards must surely exceed their ratio in the population, hey?
Oh, it is highly magnified. And just like at your local fast food place, you know, blacks and Mexicans and Arabs may represent, you know, 0.001 of your local population, but 100% of your, you know, current staff at every corporate Jew-owned fast food place. And they base it on their DEI, diversity, equity, and quality hiring practices, but it's just white genocide. But you can't enforce, okay, you should only have 2% black people or 2% or, you know, whatever the actual population is on the floors of your companies, right? But that, yeah, they don't have a problem with a completely black McDonald's staff in a 99% white community. Just like they don't have a problem with your local elections being skewed to inclusivity and diversity candidates that are progressive, that hate the American experiment, hate the Constitution, want to go to a globalist socialist system openly, and they're being pushed into positions of power. And anybody like myself who tries to get into politics is taken out as soon as people realize you're not with the program. You know, so I had to be taken out and my career, you know, political career nipped in the bud, because, you know, I just wasn't on that team, right? And this is, you know, how they operate. They are a mafia. They are a syndicate. And they have, you know, this all gamed out. Every local election, no matter how small, they are going to put their person in. And anybody who is identifying them and trying to call them out is identified and is taking out as soon as possible, one way or the other. You know, it's, can we find anything on them to destroy them in the media? Can we just, you know, take them out in the next election? Or do they have to have a nasty accident? Another little tidbit of this saga is the company who owned the ship, the Dolly, she was an Asian, and she was the sister of Mitch McConnell's wife. And if you don't know U.S. politics, Mitch McConnell is the ranking Republican senator in the United States. So this is a huge, powerful man that has control of the Republican Party in the Senate. And his wife is this Asian, yeah, Chinese woman, and her sister just happened to be the CEO of the company that owned the ship. And she died just last week or so at a party where she was supposedly drunk and backed her Tesla into a pond and drowned. So I thought that was a very interesting death in the run-up to this event. And the other thing is there's a Salvador Dali painting about a bridge and a broken dream. And that the, you know, the symbolism there of the, you know, Francis Scott Key bridge, the dream of an independent Republican free of Jewish influence, as the broken dream in this little fiasco, symbolism of, you know, meta art, if you will, meta theater. You know, Trotsky was all about saying, you know, all politics is theater, that you just create the event to get the response from the audience. And you know, he was big into terrorism to get people's attention, to make them think certain ways. And so this idea of, you know, political theater, when it gets into the terrorism range, you know, is this what we have? And if so, what is their end game? What are they trying to accomplish here? So back to you.
Well, there are very interesting issues that you raise, lots of interesting stuff. I must say that any statistics we can ever get on these blacks, I will also look around, because I think that blacks are way overrepresented. They're as dumb as planks, and you got these people as dumb as planks in positions of insane power. I find the positions in your country, like having a black who's the secretary of defense or whatever it is. And also just that other thing that General Brown, I just can't get over that. That you got blacks in charge of your highest and most important position, which is national defense. That's like putting a retard in charge of your most important positions, and that no white males. You should have just white males representing your army, your air force, your navy, and that kind of thing. You're talking superpower politics, access to nuclear weapons, all kinds of super insanely powerful weaponry, and basically you got a bunch of retards in charge of that. I find that horrific. I find it horrific. And even just the other ones that are just floating around Congress, there's that that video of that black, I think it was black man, who was talking about islands, and that the island could tilt over from from too much weight. And, you know, it shows that these people haven't got the faintest freaking grasp of the laws of physics. And I got to tell you, when I look at it, you know, you got blacks in America that are truly as dumb as planks. They are no cleverer than the blacks in Africa, and dumb as a plank, but insane amounts of power at their fingertips. This is what Jews would love. This is wrong. Okay, this is seriously wrong.
Yeah, Hank Johnson, Representative Hank Johnson, has been the representative from Georgia's 4th congressional district since 2007. Not only did he win his election, being dumb as a bucket of rocks, but he gets reelected all because of Jewish power, that the Jews, you know, radicalize the blacks in that area, Georgia, and any white person that tries to run, they take out, you know, because they want this, you know, angry black man, you know, to be their voice of Georgia, right? And same thing with, you know, Sheila Jackson Lee. You know, the woman is just dim, but yet she is a queen. She is about power. And she is a huge racist. Yeah, that's the other thing, is they're openly racist towards white people, but that's okay. You can be openly racist against white people because of slavery. But if you try to say, do you know that, you know, the Jews actually own the slave markets, the big plantations, the slave ships, and the insurance companies that were underwriting the ships, and black people were actually selling other black people in Africa to the Jews, you know, they don't want to hear that. You know, they just hear, ma, you know, white people were slaveholders, white people are evil, you know, Civil War good, Lincoln good, white people bad. And that's the mentality of these people. And it's just like Nelson Mandela and what he did to South Africa, you know, what Martin Luther King did to the South here in Dixie. It's just this, you know, little puppets that are out there in the Jewish media being fluffed up and amplified when they have no real leadership material at all. And they're usually quite degenerate, you know, that they, you know, have a very, very dark side, like Martin Luther King, you know, and but yet they are protected by this hidden hand. So back to you.
Yeah, very interesting, very shocking what's happening there. The bottom line is white people are losing control of your politics and your society. You're losing control of all the positions of power. And that would be the kind of thing that Jews would push for like crazy. But, yeah, very interesting stuff. I mean, I saw a video the other day that I thought was just insane. I assume you've seen it, where black churches in America are calling for $5 billion in reparations. Now, I'm not sure if this was also in Baltimore, but calling for $5 billion in reparations from white churches. And and in there's this black guy saying, you know, I'm a suffering black man, but when I look at his suit that he's wearing, I'm sure you and I could not afford that suit. It wasn't the prettiest suit, but I look at that suit that he's wearing, and I'm sure that you and I would not be able to even afford it. And so here's this fat black man saying, oh, you know, I'm suffering from slavery. And by the way, it's not just that blacks sold blacks into slavery. Blacks hunted other blacks down to sell them into slavery. And blacks also bought black slaves. So, you know, the whole thing of, oh, just a white man. And I think it's only 3% of whites in the South who even owned black slaves. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I mean, this is all a bunch of baloney. The whole thing from end to end is just a bunch of baloney.
Right. And you know, you're spot on. And the key thing there is it's still going on in Africa. You still have an active slave trade, both in the black areas, the Arab areas, and then you know, say, modern sex slave, child trafficking, etc., that is going on. You have over 400,000 children, mostly white children, that are abducted every year in the United States that are sold into these slavery systems, either to be harvested for body parts or to be sold as sex slaves, ritual sacrifice, adrenochrome factory, whatever. You know, and these people don't care about any of that that's going on current year, but they say white people, white churches owe us reparations, but yet they don't say anything about the synagogues needing to pitch in their fair share of reparations. You never hear these blacks say anything about Jews. And if you do, you hear it one time, and then that black has disappeared and replaced with somebody else, like Malcolm X. You know, that you, as soon as you start talking bad about Jews instead of white people, you're a problem Schwarzer to these people, and they will take you out one way or the other. And you know, you talk about the abdication of the white man, and I keep saying, you know, white people just need to get their head in the game, and we can fix this problem. And when you go back to, you know, Churchill's handling, you know, Winston Churchill, his handler was a guy named Frederick Lindemann, who wrote a book where he was bragging about the biggest thing that people will remember about the age, you know, this age of the, you know, post-World War II. It's not going to be Hitler in the Second World War. It's not going to be nuclear energy. It's not going to be communism. It will be the abdication of the white man throughout all white nations. We are going to force the white man to stand down and get on bended knee. And this is, you know, his, in the book, The Professor or The Prof by Harold Macmillan, R.F. Harrod on Macmillan Publishing, 1959. You know, and so you see, this is that plan to blot out Amalek. You know, we are going to replace, you know, white people in their own lands. You know, white, when the Theodore Herzl and the, you know, World Zionist Congress met in 1897 in Switzerland, that was the big thing, that, you know, white people cannot be trusted to control their own countries. We have to come in and fix this, and this is where you got the Kalergi plan and the Cloward-Piven plan, and, you know, assassinations of the best of the Gentiles, you know, of all that, you know, propaganda of the deed, assassination of the Christian white leadership, you know, to make way for democracies, and then from democracies you got multiculturalism, and finally white genocide and a world government. That's their end game. And then you add in the component of a world government not ruled by Jews, but ruled by Jews' computers that they program, that will, you know, decide what you can and can't do, what you can and can't have based on your social credit score. So you look at their end game, people like Noah Harari and Jacob Schwab, that, yeah, their world government is a post-free will society where, you know, everything about you is put in your file, and that constitutes your social credit score of the quality of life you're going to be allowed to have. This is their New World Order agenda versus anything to do with independent, free living, having families, you know, contributing to the greater good, et cetera. You know, they want us wiped out, and they're trying to psych us into abdicating, you know, to just giving up. This is that learned helplessness, and this is what we have to combat.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of stuff we have to combat. These people have, all these other people have got too much power for their small size of groups. And the way that they're manipulating Americans, I must say, I just look at America, and to me, it's like Jews are just whoring all over America in every conceivable way, in ways that stagger the mind. Very, very bad stuff. Well, Frederick, we've been chatting actually quite a bit of extra time here, but it was really good fun and lots of things that we got into. And one last thing, I was thinking of somebody that both you and I knew, Dion Werewolf of Radio Werewolf. He kind of quietly disappeared, and we never heard from him again. And I must say, he's one guy that I kind of miss. I sit and think about him. He was a really good guy. I had good chats with him, and then he just quietly disappeared, and there was no contact information for him or anything. And I think about him many times, and I wonder where he and his people are.
Oh, I agree. I owe, both Dion and Sygard over at Radio Werewolf so much when I was first getting my show, The Breakfast Club, started. He really promoted my work and helped me get that going. And, working there with him at Radio Werewolf, I really enjoyed that and learned a lot from he and Sygard. So definitely, if you're listening, please come, get back in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you and hope you're doing well. And, we do think about you a lot.
Definitely, definitely. I've thought many, many times of Dion Werewolf, and I even tried to email him, but I don't have any other contact information. I know the city in which he lived, but I don't have a phone number, don't have anything. I just wondered, what has happened to them, etc. Because they were good guys. They were good guys trying to do good stuff, and I'm sorry to see them disappear. We need every hand on board that we can get, really. Whites need to fight back. And demoralization, my final thoughts for today is demoralization is the real issue. And all this Jew psychology, Jew this, Jew that, if you look at them, these people are screwing with the heads of white people, and they are basically terrorists. They are carrying out a form of terrorism that is not properly defined as terrorism, but they are screwing with people's minds, scaring people, and using psychology to a tremendous degree against whites. And the more I look at it, I must tell you, Frederick, the more I look at this, I say to myself, what you need in future white states is a bunch of laws specifically targeting Jews. You need a return to the Byzantine or Justinian laws. That's a must. That's a must. And a lot of those concepts are as valid today as ever. They shouldn't be allowed in government. They shouldn't be allowed in many places. The more I look at this, I just see a bunch of people whoring around a system that is a system that's meant to be free, it's meant to be fair, it's meant to be beautiful. And these people, they take everything and they turn it into a one big mess. And it's because of their alien psychology and alien methods. You cannot control these people. So if you have any final thoughts.
Oh, I think you hit it on the head there. They are not us, and they are a direct threat to us and our way of life, and they should be dealt with accordingly. You can't allow your civilization to be destroyed and a population to be replaced. This is genocide, and these people are actively going for it, and they think that they are having the intellectual, ethical, and moral high ground doing it, and that the ends justify the means, and that we're just cattle to them, and white people are problem cattle that have to be eradicated, and then they're going to depopulate to they have the right number of people. And they talk about this openly, but if you say it, you're a hater and a racist. So, but anyway, I have thoroughly enjoyed today. This is quite the treat to sit down. I hate, the hillbilly professor couldn't join us. I always enjoy working with him, but I sure have enjoyed, talking to you today. And let me know when you get this released, and I'll send it out.
Well, Frederick, thank you very much. It's been good fun, and we've tackled some important stuff. And I like talking to people who have a high IQ, regardless of the terrain they come from. High IQ is what really matters, and our people have got lots of it. And it's disgusting. It's disgusting that our people don't get the chances that they should be getting. I find it almost unbelievable to sit and observe how whites are losing in their own civilization, in their home ground, on their own soil. I find that astounding and horrific. And but it has to do with the alien Jew and how that Jew is given too many chances, is given lots and lots of opportunities, and they will break any nation. These people are natural nation wreckers. For them, it's like breathing. So thank you very much for being on today's show. We will definitely be talking a lot more.
Thank you.
Give up, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know you'll win. Every fight you'll fight.